the ADVFN podcast with Justin Waite.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 344 on the podcast today. Trader, investor, the mad stork. He'll be talking about some stocks he likes and one of his biggest losses he's ever made and how he learnt and what he learnt from that. And also I have Ferrex Managing Director Dave Reeves. And of course I have today's penny stock with potential, as suggested by you. Just click the link here at sharepickers.com. When I say you, I mean it could be suggested by you. Maybe it is you. But you could suggest a stock that you see has potential by clicking the link at sharepickers.com. Also, this podcast is dedicated to Paul. Well, it's Paul and 5Rs, who gave me a 5-star rating and a cracking review on iTunes. And I will dedicate this podcast to you if you do the same. Simple as that. I'll read that out later, and the penny stock with potential also. Joining me on the podcast again, just come back from Sharm el Sheikh, the Mad Stork. How are you, fella? You all right?
Not too bad, Justin. Thank you for having me.
That's all right. Let's first talk about, because we're talking about some of the big wins you've had when you were previously on, and then you messaged me saying, I wouldn't mind covering some losses I've had or a big loss I've had. So take us back there. What's the biggest loss you've had, and what did you learn from it?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's critically important to talk about losses as well as wins. No one likes talking about losses, especially just after they've happened. And I think I think that if it's all very well making a lot of money, but if you then lose it all through doing some very stupid things, then you know it's all for nothing, really.
Yeah, so exactly. I mean, you can make big money, but if you lose bigger money, then you're making a loss, you know? So I suppose you've got to learn. So, yeah, so take us back to, I mean, you did mention one to me on Twitter. What was that one, big loss?
Well, So I said before, I started off in September of 2013. Mm. And by the following September, so September 2014, I'd done so well. I'd gone from 25 grand up to 275 within 12 months. Wow. And of course, at that point, I was feeling like I was just completely invincible and, you know, couldn't do anything wrong. And obviously, my strategy at that point had been to buy stocks with catalysts on the horizon, and oil stocks tend to have the most easily visible catalysts, so i.e. drilling programs coming up. So I bought a lot of one company in particular, Falkland Oil and Gas. Mm-hmm. I'd bought a lot of Falkland Oil and Gas shares because having done nothing for sort of 2 years, they had, and like a few other companies, had this big Falklands drilling campaign planned for the following year. And I knew that the price would rise in anticipation of that. I thought, I'll get in big, I'll get in early, and once the anticipatory rise has happened, you know, it wouldn't need to be that much, given how much I had in percentage terms, for me to make a lot of money. And I thought it was totally safe. I thought there was nothing that could possibly go wrong with this trade, because this draw campaign would happen and it would push the price up. So I had 500,000 Falkland Oil and Gas shares at an average of about 25p. Mm-hmm. So September 2014. Over the, you know, and we all know what happens to the oil price over the following sort of 3 or 4 months, it just cratered. And I thought that because there was this, you know, Falkland had this drill campaign coming up, and they weren't a producer, I thought that even though the oil price is tumbling, and I knew it probably would continue to tumble, that even though that's the case, not going to have an impact, and there's still going to be this catalyst, and I'm still going to end up making a lot of money. Doesn't matter. Of course, that's not how it works, as we all know. The sentiment in all oil stocks was just completely battered. And it just kept gradually dropping day after day. So in... And it wasn't just Falkland oil and gas that I held. I had Hurricane Energy and Fastnet oil and gas, as was. Big holdings in them. And so over the course of about 6 weeks, I lost about £80,000. About 6 weeks. It was about, you know, $2,000 or $3,000 every day. So it wasn't like a... It wasn't like a wake up one morning, find a duster, RNS, and immediately lose a load of money. It was gradual drip, drip, drip for that period of time. And it just grinds you down and grinds you down. And I just kept clinging to the belief that these stocks that I picked had catalysts coming up. And it didn't matter what the oil price did, because eventually those catalysts would kick in and... cause the price to rise. Of course, you know, that didn't really matter, because sentiment in the whole across the whole sector was just completely gone. And so, you know, I ended up losing a lot of money. And I actually ended up with Falkland oil and gas. It went down. You know, I had 25p average, and it fell to about 17p in mid December. And at that stage, I'd lost on Falkland oil and gas. I had lost about $45,000 on Falkland oil and gas.
So, yeah. So what? I mean, so what are you thinking then? I mean, you know, what do you get from that? What do you learn from that? I suppose initially, what I thought then, like you said, you thought you were invincible because you had too many wins. You were too successful at the start there. And what was that a key factor in this loss?
Absolutely. He got to the stage where literally every single conviction buy that I'd made had eventually paid off. So I think I'm just trying to remember, and I do think that every single buy that I'd made following my strategy had actually paid off up to that point. And you know, I couldn't see any reason why these stocks that I picked would be any different. Even though, if I'd taken a step back and looked at it from the outside, I'd have been like, it doesn't really matter. If the price of oil has fallen 50%, then it doesn't matter about individual shares. All oil stocks are going to take a massive hit. Mm-hmm. And they did. And, you know, Falkland oil and gas actually didn't fall by as much as quite a few stocks. But because I had so much in, ended up being a big loss. And as it turned, you know, I actually panic sold a few right at the low points, because I was in because I was mentally completely gone at that point. It was a case of, like, as I say, 6 weeks, $80,000 down the toilet. And my confidence was just completely gone. And I just thought, I'll salvage whatever I can. End up selling about half my stock really near the low points. And as it turned out, of course, if I had held Falkland oil and gas for the drill campaign, which I knew was coming, if I'd held, I could have sold most of my shares at my original target, which was 40p. So I think I probably could have sold all 500,000 shares at around about 35 to 40p when the price rebounded, when it was confirmed they were doing the drill campaign.
It was a scary time though, obviously, like I said, because you see this macroeconomic problem with oil. So what would you have done differently now, you know, if you'd gone back and with a bit of hindsight?
First of all, you've got to, you know, the most important thing, as you say, is never think you're invincible. Never think that you can't do anything wrong. Always be prepared to admit that you've made a mistake. And I wasn't at that point. And now, and it's so when you've made such a big call and you're so committed, it's so difficult to say, well, actually, I have made a mistake and I do need to take this loss before it gets any worse. So wait, be prepared to take a loss if looking at it objectively, mm-hmm. you know that the share is going to keep falling. And B, don't think that any particular share is immune from wider market sentiment. If it's an oil share and the oil price is tumbling, it doesn't really matter the specifics of the stock. It's going to fall.
Yeah. And did you scale into that, or did you just go in big time straight away?
I was scaling in from July, so July that year. So, my average was around about 25p.
Yeah. So now, though, I assume, you're better for that experience, aren't you?
Yes. I mean, I would always be prepared to admit now that I've made a big call and it's wrong. I would never blindly hold on to a stock if I had compelling evidence that things are about to go wrong.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Yeah. No. I mean, it's fascinating. I always try to look at the positive side. And like you said, you know, it's just funny how on the flip side of the coin, you know, things went too well for you, and that was a negative, you know, that was a problem.
It was very fortunate that they had gone. So I mean, I was incredibly lucky that my big loss. Occurred when I'd already made $250,000, so I could afford that loss. But it's funny, isn't it, because making all that money never felt as good as losing a proportion of it felt bad. So
yeah, they say pain of losing is three times as powerful as the pleasure of winning when you make something. So people hate losing three times as much as they enjoy winning. So it's always hard to do that. Okay, cool. Well, let's talk about some stocks you've got at the moment. I know last time you were on, Plutus Power Gen was a big holding of yours, but they had an announcement, a bit of a profit warning, and then they, in fact, didn't they award directors shares? And they've moved the goalposts a little bit on the share award system. Well, I mean, explain what happened there.
Yeah. So this ties into what I was saying about not blindly holding a stock, because as you know, I was incredibly bullish on Plutus Power Gen. I was fully planning for that to be a big long-term holding, but what's happened is when Plutus Plutus Resources, old company, did a reverse takeover of Attune Energy, and the vendors of Attune Energy, which is now the sort of Plutus Power Gen, were promised share awards.
So
50 million shares between for each. So there was two vendors, so 100 million shares altogether, mm-hmm. and they were promised them on the basis of the company meeting certain earnings per share targets. And they would only be awarded those shares if those targets were met. Now, what's happened is at the AGM, Plutus put out an announcement saying at the AGM there's going to be a resolution saying we're going to alter the conditions of awarding the shares, and in fact we're going to say we're just going to award these guys 100 million shares anyway, because it's become apparent that these earnings per share targets won't be met. Now, not only is that moving the goalposts in a really sort of unacceptable way, it's also a profit warning. I mean, it's not they didn't flag it as a profit warning, but de facto that's what it is, because they're saying that these earnings per share targets won't be met. Now, the company have said that this is an accounting issue because of the way that they have to report the profit and loss on the special purpose vehicles on the balance sheet. Now, that's fine, Well, I mean, they should have known about this issue before they even bothered with the EPS targets. That's one thing. They've also said that there's been delays in planned permission and they're going to incur extra costs as well, which is going to further reduce the profitability of the company. So that's a profit warning. And they've buried it in an AGM resolution. So, and they have effectively, I know it's technically not dilution because those shares were included in the admission document, so it's not technically dilution, but very, very shortly after coming on your podcast and saying no dilution, they've done what looks like dilution. So they've awarded these shares to these directors, yeah. 100 million extra shares, which are now totally an issue shortly after saying no dilution. Now, again, it's not technically dilution, but it looks an awful lot like it.
So do you still hold shares there?
I have a nominal amount of shares, which I will use, which I may use to attend the AGM, which is on Friday.
Yeah.
But no, I don't have a significant amount anymore. Yeah. Now, the thing that, you know, the regardless of anything else, the fact that they've chosen to done this in such a sort of ham-fisted...
cloak and dagger a little bit, isn't it? It's it's not very open with it, really.
Yeah, and they've also, I mean, there was no reason to award these shares at this particular AGM. They could have done it at any point because the EPS, the conditions for awarding the shares sort of were over 4 years from the date of the reverse takeover. Mm-hmm. So they could have done it in 2017, which, you know, they should have done because there would have been additional proof of progress. Or they could have staged the awards, maybe 10 million this year, 10 million next year, etc. There are so many ways that they could have done it to make it not seem as terrible. And it would have been, and it's such an obvious mistake to make. Mm-hmm. And the fact they didn't realise what sort of impact this would have, it just says to me that what was said, well, has completely ruined my confidence in their judgment and their ability to understand the market. So, that's the main thing that's got it. So my confidence in their judgment is gone, and therefore I can't blindly hold the shares, even though I was previously bullish on them.
Okay. Another holding you last time was Paragon Entertainment. Are you still in there? Are you still as confident with that company?
Yes, in fact, I have increased my holding in there. Mark and Mark, the two Marks, are on your podcast, I believe, on the 9th.
Yeah, they are, yeah. So yeah, that should be good, I've seen a lot of good things about Paragon, because I'm in the little chat room there on Twitter, and they seem like a good company, and I'll be very interested to see what they're about, because I think it's nice to chat to people and get their story, you know, because you read as much as you want on RNSs, but when you get to chat to the guys, I chatted to Mark once on the phone, he seems a very nice guy, very upfront, honest guy.
He's very good.
So it'd be nice to chat to him on the podcast. I'm looking forward to that. Okay, so let's look at one stock now you see some potential upside in, and tell us why. What are you looking at?
So apart from Paragon, which is obviously my largest holding, Fastnet equity. I know I mentioned it previously, actually, as it was Fastnet Oil and Gas. Mm-hmm. Now, Cathal Friel, the main guy behind it, has done is he's seen the fact that there's no future in Irish Sea oil exploration production, because of the oil price environment. So what he's done is he has divested the oil and gas assets and turned it basically into a cash shell. Mm-hmm. Now, the company has 2.8p per share worth of cash. Price is currently just over 2p to buy.
Yeah.
So it's 2.8p per share worth of cash. Now, his plan, I believe, I haven't actually spoken to him, although I have spoken to people who have spoken to him, see what I mean, is that he will do a reverse takeover of a biotech company, get directors on board with experience in biotech, and look to do a very value-adding deal. Now, if that happens, and bear in mind that he recently bought shares at 4p, so he bought quite a few shares off another big holder, 4p. So he clearly sees big upside there. And if he can do a deal in the biotech space with competent directors, near-term cash flow, exciting product, then I think there's massive upside there.
Yeah, and but, you know, looking at the chart there, literally you could draw a straight line on the support there, two pence pretty much. It's like bouncing off that every time, isn't it? It's like I've never seen this yet.
Well, I mean, it's got very strong cash back.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the absolute worst case scenario is that they can't do a deal prior to August of 2016. In which case, there'll be an EGM and there'll be a vote. Well, there should be. If there isn't, then I'll get some people together to call an EGM. But there will be an EGM to wind the company down and distribute the remaining cash, which at that point, minus overheads, will be approximately 2.8p a share. Mm-hmm. So that is the worst case scenario. And under that worst case scenario, you're looking at, from the current buy price, you're looking at about 30, 35, 40% return on your money, which, you know, let's face it, is slightly better than putting it in a bank. Now, I know that that's not gonna excite people. That's not gonna excite private investors who are looking for exciting shares with immediate action and immediate upside. I can see why the share price is where it is, because nothing has been happening. Mm-hmm. But I believe that's about to change. Cool. And if it does, when they start saying about what they're going to do, getting directors on board, doing this reverse takeover, selling the story, which I'm assured is going to happen, then I think you are going to see a very big move to the upside. Mm-hmm. Very big. But even if that doesn't happen, you know, the worst case scenario is a 40% return on your money.
Nice. Well, that's a cracking bad case scenario, isn't it? A worst case scenario. Mm-hmm. That's lovely. Thanks, fella. Thanks for coming on and giving us so much information about, you know, about Fastday and Plutus Power Gen and Paragon Entertainment and sharing with us your big loss there, which you learned a lot from. That's cracking. Listen, I'll put your little Twitter address there at sharepickers.com. Mad Stalk, come on again soon, please.
I will do. Thank you very much.
Today's penny stock with potential is suggested by Scooby Loo. Thanks for getting involved again, Scooby. Much appreciated. What's the name and ticker symbol? It's PCG Entertainment. What does the company do? Gaming industry based around mainly poker, but with lottery and other facets in China. Would you say this company is a short, medium, long-term investment? Medium to long hold, but with tradable once liquidity increases. Will be tradable once liquidity increases. Okay. How many shares does the company have in issue? 1.1 billion. What's the current price and market cap of the company? 1.75, 19 million market cap. Let's have a check on the share price there. PCGE. It's 1.625, so it's come back a little bit there. List three reasons why you think this company has potential. Now a net profitable company on AIM, a rarity. From a 2 million loss last year, now with a 400k profit in the last quarter. Number two, revenue increased sixfold in the last 12 months. Number three, the media and gaming sectors are among the fastest growing in China, and analysts calculate will grow substantially to over 22 billion during the coming year. So there we are. It's PCG Entertainment, PCGE. Don't forget, please do your own research on everything or anything mentioned on this podcast, as it's not intended as an investment advice, just a stepping stone do the next, to your, you know, your next bit of research, essentially. So by all means, get involved, click the link here at shippickers.com and suggest a penny stock that you think has potential. And joining me right now on the podcast is Dave Reeves, Managing Director of Ferrex. Dave, thank you for joining me.
Great pleasure, Justin.
Now, straight away, I know you're not from this country, so you're probably really enjoying our weather at the moment.
Absolutely, I believe it's good for the skin, all of this humidity and rain.
Yeah, I don't know if it is. I mean, I feel like an old man as I got off my bike this morning after coming from torrential rain. I did feel like I'd aged about 20 years. But you've just come from lovely weather, haven't you?
It's been delightful down under, 38 degrees. We're into summer and it's a season to be jolly.
Wow, 38 degrees. I don't know why you're over here. You could have this podcast from over there. Anyway, Dave, thanks for coming on the podcast. And there are people, of course, that have heard of your company. There are people listening to the podcast who've never heard of you. So can you give us a broad outline as to what you're all about, please?
Absolutely. So Ferrex PLC is a resource development company. Put out a pretty significant announcement today where we've broadened our focus, if you can say that, where what we're doing is our strategy is to chase near-term development projects that are easily developed at low capital near infrastructure. And with that in mind, today we announced the acquisition of a gold project in Australia. And we also have several other projects in the portfolio from our previous efforts, one of which is manganese in Togo, which we're waiting on a mining license and will bring into production after the Australian gold comes into production. We also have some iron ore, which is a bit more of a long-term play these days with where the iron ore price is. But in a nutshell, we're all about bringing in cash flow as soon as possible and using that cash flow to add to shareholder value by investing in bigger and better things.
Okay, so so is this sort of a change in priorities or a change in direction or what?
I think it's been a good hard look in the mirror and a bit of navel gazing's gone on. And, you know, we could sit there and cry into our beer about the state of the iron ore market. Or we could get up and do something about it. And that's what we've done. We've looked at a lot of projects around the world. We've decided not to be focused specifically on any one commodity or any one country. We think the world's your oyster in these depressed times, and now's the time to really get busy. You know, if you can get projects going now in these times that are producing cash, as the cycle turns, and I think there's a lot of people starting to forecast that we're pretty close to the bottom, it's only up from here.
Yeah, so why this project particularly in Australia there?
Couple of points. Firstly, Australian gold is just a wonderful place to be. The Australian dollar has devalued from about $1.10 to the US to about 70 to 75 cents. So Australian gold price is around $15.50 an ounce. Hand in hand with that, we've seen prices for labour and operating costs plummet in Australian dollar terms because of the current doom and gloom that we're in. There's a lot of people and a lot of equipment sitting idle, so you can get some pretty special rates on your main operating costs. You put those together and Australian gold has got to be one of the most profitable places to be at the moment. So that was number one. Number two, we can get into production very quickly. We're talking 4 to 6 months into production because of the arrangement that's now in place to tribute and mill through existing infrastructure. And number three, very cheap entry, a bit of working capital to do some initial grade control, mobilize the equipment, and we're into cash flow.
Okay, so take us through the timeline here. So what's the next milestone here?
Next milestone, we'll be mobilizing the rigs to start that grade control drilling before Christmas, get assays back. We'll be getting the final permits in place. It's all on mining permits, but there's a few notice of intents and others that you need to inform people that you're starting up. Enter into the contracts for the hiring of equipment and people, and start digging and start making money.
Cool. And you said sort of minimal capital investment. How much are you talking?
We're saying around £300,000.
Okay. And do you have that?
We have various ways of getting that at the moment in our bank balance, not as we stand, but I think for the amount that we're talking, we've got various options we can look at.
Okay, and so this is I assume this is now the priority to get some cash flow coming in, is that right?
Absolutely. My busking skills aren't very good, and that's where you're down to these days if you want to be raising money in mining. So much rather be producing gold, producing money. So yes, it's really the core focus now is to get this into production.
Okay, and so your other assets, like you mentioned there, what's going to be happening to them? Are they just put on the back burner for a while, or are you still doing things with those?
Certainly on the iron ore, that's on the back burner. We're looking at a few non-conventional ways to try and realise value from those. Manganese, I'm actually off to Togo with our mining permit, because certainly what we plan on doing is getting the gold into production, into cash flow, and using a portion of that cash flow to bring Togo into production and provide a doubling up of cash.
Okay, and are you still looking? I mean, once the cash starts coming in, will you still be on the sort of acquisition trail, or are you happy with what you have at the moment?
We are on the acquisition trail because we believe, as I said, that we're close to the bottom. We think there's some really good deals you can do. We would like to put this cash flow to good use in the belief that the cycle will turn in the next 2 to 3 years. And we believe if we can use this cash flow and position ourselves well, then the rewards will be substantial for shareholders.
Yeah, I'm looking at the chart, and it seems like you've got a strong support level there at 0.4 pence. Do you look at charts at all?
I'm not the world's most technically orientated charter. I do look at what our price is, but I do not look into the fundamentals of charting.
Yeah, but I'm just looking at risk-reward there. It seems quite a good little play, you know, because, I mean, you know, if you've ever dipped below 0.4, then it's bounced back up, so it seems quite a nice, solid level there. So are you quite excited with this new direction then, Dave?
Oh, absolutely. Goes without saying. And, I hope the market will join me in that very shortly, in that, you know, at the moment to find resource companies producing cash flow with minimal dilution, no huge capex bills to have to pay, I think it's pretty rare. We're very excited about the future and believe value will be reflected in the share price in the near term.
Yeah, cool. Okay. Well, excellent stuff. Try and convince me. Come on, Dave. Give me 3 reasons why you think I should invest in your company.
Okay. Really, I mean, I could just say cash flow, cash flow, cash flow. if we want to go beyond that, cash flow number one, absolutely. Number two would be increasing cash flow through Togo and a higher value project that we're looking at announcing shortly. We're all crusty old mining professionals. What we do best is digging holes. We're about to start doing that. And come join us for the ride.
Excellent stuff. Well, Dave, love to chat to you. And like I said, you sound quite excited there. And you obviously have a good bit of positive news flow coming out over the next few months. So I'll be I'll be putting your company on my watch list. And listen, come back on when you have some more news. Please do.
Will do. Thanks very much, Justin.
That's it for today's podcast. This podcast is dedicated to Paul gave me a 5-star rating and this review on iTunes. Top chap. And seems to be as honest as you can be in this strange world. Thank you very much, Paul. I do appreciate that. I try to be as honest and transparent as possible on the podcast. Hope that comes across. And like I said, I'm just a private investor with a passion for stocks and shares and who does a daily podcast. Maybe a little too passionate sometimes, you know what I'm saying? But by all means, if you'd like to dedicate or give me a rating and review on iTunes, I'll dedicate the podcast to you. That's all I'm trying to say. Thanks for listening. Don't forget, don't buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation on this podcast. It's only just opinion. Please do your own research. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciated.
The ADVFN Podcast with Justin Waite.